Opening narration.
Akhotra Foundation presents the Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Introduction.
What if achieving everything you ever wanted, becoming this global icon, only amplified your deepest, most hidden pain? How much weight can one person truly carry? Today, we're plunging into a deep dive on the life and tragic death of Kurt Cobain, the iconic frontman of Nirvana, and we're doing it through the lens of Charles R. Cross's acclaimed biography, Heavier Than Heaven.
Yeah, in this book, it's really not just another rock star story. Cross makes this compelling case that Cobain's life and his death, well, they can't be understood just as a simple downfall. It's more like a profound examination of how deep-rooted psychological trauma combined with this incredible creative genius and then the crushing weight of fame, it all just created a perfect storm.
A perfect storm. That sounds about right. It feels like more than just a cautionary tale.
Exactly. It's about artistic brilliance, mental illness, addiction, and fame's pressures all colliding. It shows how his sensitivity just wasn't compatible with, well, everything that happened to him.
And the author, Charles Cross, he had this incredible access, didn't he? He wasn't just some outsider looking in.
No, not at all. He was the editor of The Rocket, you know, Seattle's big music magazine, right when grunge was exploding. Mm-hmm. So he was there. But the really crucial thing, Courtney Love gave him exclusive access to Kurt's private stuff, unpublished journals, diaries, letters, even drawings. Plus, he did over 400 interviews.
Wow, 400. That kind of access, it must give a perspective we just wouldn't get otherwise, right? Into his actual inner world?
Absolutely. It lets us humanize him, move beyond the myth. So our mission today really is to peel back those layers. We want to reveal the, you know, complex psychological landscape of this man who became, almost accidentally, the voice of a generation. And maybe explore what his story means for you today.
Yeah, because some of these struggles, they feel surprisingly universal when you strip away the rock star part.
You might be surprised, yeah.
Yeah.
That search for belonging, for authenticity, it resonates.
The chronological journey.
Okay, so to really get Kurt, Cross argues we have to go right back to the beginning. What was his early childhood like in Aberdeen?
Well, Cross paints this picture of it being initially quite happy and vibrant. Kurt was this sensitive, really energetic kid, loved to draw, loved music, full of artistic promise.
Sounds almost idyllic, but that didn't last.
No. The shattering moment, what Cross calls the original wound, was the bitter divorce of his parents, Don and Wendy. He was 9, and it just completely changed him. He became withdrawn, sullen, angry. That idyllic world was gone.
So Cross sees this divorce not just as a sad event, but as something foundational, like it set a pattern.
Absolutely pivotal. That instability being shuffled between relatives afterwards, it apparently instilled this deep, deep fear of abandonment and humiliation. It laid the psychological groundwork, you know, influencing his relationships, his decisions, that constant search for acceptance he felt he'd lost.
Right. And then moving into his teenage years, Aberdeen wasn't exactly a nurturing place for an artistic, sensitive kid, was it?
No, Aberdeen was bleak, economically depressed. He was an outcast, bullied for being small, for being artistic. He just didn't fit in.
So where does punk rock come into this? Was that his escape?
It was absolutely his lifeline. Discovering bands like the Melvins, the Sex Pistols, Black Flag, it was a revelation. It gave him an identity, a community, even a small one, and crucially, an outlet. A place to channel all that rage and alienation he was feeling. It wasn't just music. It validated him.
And despite all the difficulties Cross mentions, homelessness, poverty, early drug use, he had this intense drive, right? He wasn't just passively angry.
That's a key point Cross makes, often overlooked. Even amidst all that chaos, experimenting with marijuana, alcohol, which Cross suggests were partly, you know, creative fuel, but also an emotional anesthetic. He was incredibly driven, desperate to create, to connect, to get out. He had a vision even then.
And that drive led him to Chris Novoselic and eventually Dave Grohl, Nirvana.
Did he have a clear idea of what he wanted the band to sound like?
Oh, definitely. Cross describes it as this really clear vision. He wanted to fuse punk energy, you know, that raw feel with the heavy riffs of Black Sabbath, but also, crucially, the pop sensibilities, the melodies of the Beatles, that mix of heavy and catchy.
Aggressive and beautiful, like you said. And their first album, Bleach, cost almost nothing to make.
Yeah, recorded for just over $600. It perfectly captured that raw angst of where they came from. They did these grueling early tours, playing to almost nobody sometime.
And then that. Everything changed. Never mind. Smells like Teen Spirit. Overnight, they went from this niche indie band to, well, the biggest band in the world. How did Kurt handle that?
Well, that's the core paradox, isn't it? He experienced this massive success not as a win, but as this source of intense anxiety.
Yeah.
Conflict. He was apparently horrified that the mainstream was co-opting his music, hated being called the spokesman for a generation. He felt like a fraud.
A fraud for succeeding. Yeah, for achieving this huge commercial success with something he felt was like deeply personal and authentic artistic expression. It created enormous pressure. His dream became a kind of nightmare.
And right in the middle of this crazy rise, Cross talks about his physical health, this mysterious chronic stomach pain. That wasn't just a minor issue, was it?
Not at all. It became the central agonizing torment in his adult life. Doctors couldn't figure it out, couldn't treat it effectively. Just excruciating pain.
And how does Cross connect that physical pain to his escalating drug use, specifically heroin?
Cross makes a really strong argument that the heroin use started, at least in part, as self-medication for that legitimate physical suffering. Kurt apparently said it was the only thing that could stop the pain and make him feel normal. But then, tragically, it evolved into this full-blown addiction that just piled onto his existing mental health issues.
A devastating cycle. Physical pain feeding psychological pain, feeding addiction.
Exactly. A feedback loop he couldn't escape.
And then, amidst all this internal and external chaos, he meets Courtney Love. Their relationship is legendary, but how does Cross portray it?
As immediate, incredibly intense, founded on the shared background of trauma, ambition, and yeah, drug use. Cross paints her as both his soulmate and a partner in that destructive lifestyle. Their relationship was this vortex of codependency and escalating heroin use.
Codependency,
yeah.
Meaning they relied on each other and unhealthy ways, maybe enabling the drug use?
Pretty much, yeah. A really intense, tangled connection that was both loving and ultimately destructive for both of them in many ways.
Then their daughter, Frances Bean, was born. Cross highlights Kurt's deep desire, because of his own childhood, to create a stable family. The irony there is just painful.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. His deepest wish was for that stability, that loving family he felt he never had, but the very addiction he used to cope with his past trauma made that dream impossible to sustain, especially with the insane public scrutiny they were under.
And artistically, after Nevermind came In Utero, Cross presents it as a very deliberate statement, almost a rebellion.
Yes, precisely. It was a conscious move away from the slickness and massive appeal of Nevermind. The sound is abrasive, the lyrics dark, visceral. Cross argues it was Cobain trying to alienate that new mainstream audience, trying to reclaim his punk credibility, like saying, this is me, take it or leave it.
It really underscores that lifelong struggle he had, doesn't it? Trying to stay true to his art in the face of the music industry machine. He hated feeling fake.
Yeah, that idea of ripping people off by faking it was poison to him. Authenticity was everything, even when it made his life incredibly difficult, even unbearable. Compromise felt like betrayal.
Core philosophy and values.
So if we try to synthesize what really drew him, what was his core philosophy according to Cross? What was he fundamentally about?
Well, I think underpinning everything was this fierce commitment to emotional honesty, to authenticity. He seemed driven by a need to express his inner turmoil, his alienation, his anger at hypocrisy, directly through his art. His philosophy seemed to be about rejecting phoniness, whether in music or in life. He valued raw feeling over polished presentation. And there was this constant search for connection, for belonging, driven by that early sense of abandonment.
So success wasn't the goal in itself. It was more about expressing something true.
Exactly. Success was almost incidental or even problematic when it felt like it diluted the message or attracted the wrong kind of attention. His purpose seemed tied to channeling that pain and confusion into something meaningful, something real. Failure to him might have looked like compromising that integrity.
Three pivotal turning points.
Okay, let's zero in on those key moments Cross identifies. The real seismic shifts in his life. You mentioned the first one earlier.
Yes, the first absolutely crucial one was the divorce of his parents when he was 9, that original wound. It wasn't just sad. It fundamentally altered his sense of security and self-worth. It created this deep vulnerability, this fear of abandonment that, Cross argues, echoed through his entire life, affecting everything.
A foundational crack, really. What's the second turning point?
The second pivotal event was the onset of his chronic stomach pain. This wasn't just illness. It was constant agonizing torment that doctors couldn't fix. And crucially, Cross directly links this excruciating physical pain to his self-medication, first with opiates, then escalating to heroin. It trapped him. It was a physical prison fueling a psychological one, driving the addiction cycle.
It makes the addiction seem less like a choice and more like a desperate attempt to cope with unbearable pain.
That's certainly how Cross presents it, a key factor in the downward spiral.
And the third turning point. Ironically, the moment of his greatest triumph.
Right. The release of Nevermind. While it was this massive artistic and commercial breakthrough, for Kurt personally, it was a turning point for the worse. It thrust him into this global spotlight he hated, creating immense psychological pressure. He felt like a sellout, a corporate puppet betraying his punk ideals. The very thing that looked like heaven adoration, success became for him a weight heavier than heaven. Just unbearable.
Human lessons and reflection.
Looking back at his whole story through the lens of this book, what are the bigger human lessons we can maybe take away? What speaks to you, the listener, today?
Well, one really striking thing is that symbiosis of physical and emotional pain. His stomach condition wasn't just physical. Cross really emphasizes how it seems linked to his psychological trauma and how it directly fueled the addiction. It highlights how tightly our minds and bodies are connected, you know, and how desperate people can become to escape chronic pain, leading to self-destructive coping.
That connection is so often underestimated. And what about fame? The book paints such a stark picture of its dark side.
Yeah, the paradox of fame is huge here. He clearly had ambition. He wanted his music heard. But the reality of superstardom, it became his prison. He hated the commercialism, the loss of privacy, feeling misunderstood. That quote about his high school bullies now being in the front row. Wow, it speaks volumes about his feeling of alienation, even at the peak.
It seems like that search for belonging, which started in childhood, never really ended for him, even when he was globally famous.
Exactly. Nirvana was partly him trying to build a new family, find his tribe. But even surrounded by millions of fans, Cross suggests he felt profoundly alone. It really illustrates the potentially destructive nature of modern celebrity culture.
And it brings up difficult questions about the people around him, doesn't it? The challenge of supporting someone without enabling them?
For sure. Cross touches on the complex dynamics of enablement, how loved ones, Courtney, Chris, his parents, they all struggled. How do you help someone you love when they're self-destructing without accidentally making it easier for them to continue? It's an incredibly tough position.
It's just a powerful, stark reminder, isn't it? That massive success on the outside doesn't mean happiness or health on the inside.
Not at all. Sometimes, it seems, it can make things much, much harder.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, let's try to distill this incredibly complex and tragic story into three core takeaways for you to reflect on, based on Cross's work.
All right, first I'd say an emotional insight. The book achieves this profound humanization of an icon. It strips away the myth, the legend, and reveals Kurt Cobain as this deeply suffering, sensitive, complicated man. He fought lifelong demons, and fame didn't create them, it just magnified them. It shows how even heaven, that global success, became this unbearable weight, heavier than he could carry.
That really comes through. Okay, what about an intellectual insight?
An intellectual insight. It exposes that devastatingly thin line between creative genius and psychological torment. The very things that made his art so powerful, that raw sensitivity, the fierce emotional honesty, the rage against hypocrisy, were intertwined with the things that made it almost impossible for him to survive the world his art created. His music wasn't just songs. Cross presents it as an unfiltered confession.
His art was inseparable from his pain. And finally, a universal insight, something practical we can all consider.
A universal insight. I think his story makes a powerful case for taking mental health issues and childhood trauma as seriously as we take physical health. It highlights the critical importance of seeking professional help, building strong, genuine support systems, and maybe most importantly, fostering a more empathetic understanding of addiction, seeing it less as a moral failing and more as, often, a disease rooted in pain and self-medication.
And underlying all that, the value of real human connection. Cross notes how Kurt's moments of hope seemed to coincide with times he felt genuinely understood and supported. That feels key.
Closing narration.
So what does this all mean for you? As we wrap up this deep dive, consider how understanding Kurt Cobain's internal world through the lens of heavier than heaven might challenge your own perceptions. Perceptions of success, of suffering, of the masks we all sometimes wear. How can we, as a society, better support creative individuals and anyone struggling with mental health? How do we recognize when even the greatest heaven might feel like an unbearable burden?
His life really invites us to look beyond the surface, doesn't it? To explore those unseen struggles and maybe find a little more empathy for those who, despite whatever persona they project, are fighting battles heavier than heaven.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.